It had amused the prince to come hunting with the older men, political cronies of his father. He knew they invited him to curry favor, but still, it was thrilling. Illegal, but thrilling. He had been on this planet before, of course, at the invitation of Lord Thornbuckle. Everyone who was anyone had, at one time or another, spent interminable hours riding large, stinking, vicious beasts, chasing after small, stinking, vicious beasts. Silly work, on the whole. And he had heard others, including this group, snicker about it privately. Lord Thornbuckle didn't care. He could afford not to care. He hadn't expected to feel queasy about it. He had felt queasy when he read the reports on the prison colonies, things his tutor had thought he ought to know. That was cruelty, if you liked, confining someone to dirty, dangerous work and mean, ugly surroundings for years on end. Killing someone cleanly with a bullet in the head was merciful by comparison. He had agreed, in more than one not-so-casual conversation, that this was so. Imagining himself a prisoner, he would rather have died in the open like that than slowly of boredom and overwork. And hence the invitation to this hunt, which had thrilled him as much with its illicit nature as with its prestige. He was born to prestige. He didn't need it. But he found himself craving the respect of Admiral Lupescu and Senator-at-Large Bowdoin. Still, the first one he killed himself, that had startled him with his own reaction to it, the nausea and guilt, the feeling of shame for being ashamed, the reluctance of his fingers to touch the tattooed ear, which he must hack off and turn in to get credit for his trophy. He had done it, but he had made a private pact with himself to be content with one. That was surely enough to prove his ability, to prove he wasn't just a spoiled wastrel who got into quarrels over opera singers. His father's words. So after that first kill, he found reasons to hang around Bandon Lodge the rest of that day. It was easy to play cards too late, drink too much, and sleep heavily when someone knocked on his door. He roused late on the morning after his blood party, as they called it, and found the lodge quiet and nearly empty. Fine with him. His head ached, and the ear, proof of his trophy, looked disgusting in its jar of preservative. He stared at it morosely and rang for medicine and breakfast. After that, he went back to bed and slept heavily, having promised himself he would find some way of avoiding more hunting. But now, something had gone wrong. He didn't know what. Lupescu had yanked him out of bed in late afternoon and insisted that he had to come hunt again, right now, whether he wanted to or not. The habit of obedience to older men got him into the flitter before he could organize his mind to protest, and then it was too late. They were on the island, and Lupescu was telling him where to go and what to do in the rough voice he probably used on his subordinates in the regular fleet. Before he could argue, Lupescu was gone. The prince stumbled around that night, angry and tired, and found nothing but mud holes in the swamp. He measured his length in one, and only his custom hunting suit kept him dry. He heard some shots in the distance, but nothing close enough to startle him. At dawn, Lupescu reappeared and handed him a meal pack.
Eat this here. We have to get them all, fast. None of us are going back until we do.
Why?
The meal pack had a picture of helicberry tarts on it, and he hated helicberries. He wanted puff cakes with sarmony honey, fat sausages, a bone melon.
Just do it.
Lupescu strode off, looking more military in the dangerous sense than the prince had seen before. And the prince, tired and hungry, sat down and ate his excellent breakfast. He did not follow Lupescu afterwards. He did not patrol his allotted section of island. It had ceased to be fun or exciting or anything but a deadly bore, and he would insist on returning to his comfortable bed on Bandon as soon as someone else showed up. Long after noon, someone else appeared, one of the servants with vaguely military bearing, and brought him two more meal packs, cold packs of water, and warnings. He was to stay on the island, he was not to drink any local water, he was not to call anyone on his comm unit, he was to shoot anything that didn't identify itself instantly. The prince was more than somewhat annoyed. One did not do this to princes. Even powerful political figures, even admirals, did not do this to princes. It was supposed to have been an adventure, with girls to follow, and the chance to reminisce for years to come, and the camaraderie of men who had proved themselves real men. It was not an adventure anymore, and no one had said anything about the promised girls for days. He said nothing to the servant, who strode away almost as purposefully as Lupescu, and ate his excellent lunch, then his excellent supper, and finally lay down where he was, protected by his excellent weather pack, to sleep as long as he liked. If the criminals got him, so much the better. Lupescu would find his head in a noose. He woke to the smell of wet leaves.
Good. No one will be skulking around in this, and Lupescu will have to let me sleep.
Lightning flashed, but the prince slept on, unconcerned. The Admiral Lupescu, who woke him in the dark, dripping aftermath of the storm, was someone he had never met. He could now credit the more vivid rumors about the Admiral's career. Faced with that cold, angry countenance, those still gray eyes with so much hunger in them, he wanted to please this man, and only the habits drilled into him from early childhood kept him from cringing apology.
I don't understand the problem. These are just criminals.
You don't have to understand. You have to obey, Your Highness.
But what's the hurry? You said we'd be here for 4 or 5 weeks, and it's only been...
Someone knows about the hunt. You wouldn't want to be compromised. You know what this could do to your future career. And we can't get them all without your help before we're discovered. Someone is bound to recognize Mr. Smith.
But surely... All right. I'll be glad to help out.
The moment it was out of his mouth, the prince realized how silly that sounded. He could feel his ears burn. He still didn't understand why they couldn't just flitter back to Bandon, take the shuttle up to the station, and find some compliant girls there. But he knew he couldn't ask Lupescu. Not now. The prince sighed, punched the button on his breakfast meal pack, and waited for it to heat. He would get his boots muddy again, and they would drag at his feet. He hated mud. This whole expedition looked more and more like a mistake rather than high adventure. The invitation had specified that they would be here in the dry season, that it could not possibly be compromised. And now he was going to be wet, muddy, and in trouble with his father. Not so much for blowing away a few criminals, or rather one criminal, as for getting caught doing it. Nonetheless, he set out to do what he was told, and worked his way up the west side of the island. He left his comm unit off. He didn't want to be distracted by whatever might come over it. Twice, he saw something move that wasn't ID'd as Hunter and shot at it. Once, whoever it was, shot back. He found two bodies, both criminals, with the ears clipped. Lupescu's plan didn't make sense to him. Herding the criminals into the interior ridge and its rough terrain would make a final cleanup harder. But he went along. He couldn't think of anything else to do. He followed the stream uphill because it was easier to walk that way. Bubbles looked up at the sound. She was sure it was loud enough to be heard outside. Had the hunters found another entrance? Was Petrus trying to find them?
We have to move, Rafa. We might find a better place to hide. And here we're trapped.
Good idea. We'll have to take the candles and mark our way.
We can't mark it. Someone could follow.
How could they tell how long ago the marks were made? We can't just go into the cave and not know how to get out.
Right.
Bubbles picked up her pack and stuffed into it everything of Kev's that would fit. Rafa would have to carry the rest. The night goggles gave her a blurry picture of the inside of the cave, and she could see a ledge extending along the left wall. Black water lay still and smooth at its edge. She fumbled at the rifle she'd taken, making sure it had a round in the chamber, and slung it on her shoulder.
This is an adventure. Just do it like you're used to, and it will all come out right.
Rafa followed her lead. Bubbles shuffled along, wishing she dared light a candle as her vision dimmed. Even with the goggles, she could see very little by the time she came to the first angle of stone that blocked the entrance. She ducked around it and leaned against the damp wall. Ahead, all was black. Utterly black. Rafa touched her arm and she jumped.
I think it's safe to light the candles now. We're out of sight of the entrance.
But they could reflect on the water, and if we are the light source, then anyone hiding back here could see us first.
Yes, but if we don't have a light, we'll step off a ledge somewhere. We can't just feel our way along.
Oh, I know.
The darkness pressed on her eyes, her face. She could almost feel furry hands clasping her. Ridiculous. She'd never been afraid of the dark before. But then, she'd never been in this cave before, either. She pushed the goggles up so that the sudden flare wouldn't blind her, and scraped the lighter until a spark caught the candle. Dim yellow light flickered around them. She put the candle into its lantern, and four beams made clear the distinction between light and shadow. Rafa's face, underlit, looked strange and dangerous and oddly exciting. Bubbles pushed that thought away. She had no time for anything but the present crisis. She looked around. They had turned a corner into a rough corridor, low, narrow, and twisting. On the opposite wall, a blurred mark showed, one of Kell's, she had no doubt. It looked like a cartoon sailboat. She had no idea why. She moved the lantern about, looking on all the rock surfaces nearby. Another mark, this one somewhat resembling a tree, near what might be a niche or another corridor, a black gash in the rock. The central cavern's water extended into all the dark entrances she could see, as if all drained into or from it.
Boat equals water. Water flows downhill, meets the sea.
A way out?
We know where the trees are, on top of this cave, and full of hunters.
She turned to continue downward, the way she hoped the boat indicated.
The light!
Bubbles had snuffed it already. In the darkness, they clung together again, hearts pounding. Bubbles saw red and yellow blotches floating on the darkness, and told herself they were the afterimage of the candle. Bubbles felt Rafa's warm breath tickling her ear.
He must have seen the light somehow.
They must not move. In the dark, they would make the kind of noise he was making. He would surely hear them. He would have one of the weapons with night-sensing equipment. Bubbles realized she'd left the night-vision goggles hanging around her neck while carrying the candle lantern, and pushed them into place, but there was no ambient light to amplify. Thick darkness pressed in on her again.
I hate caves.
Ronnie. It's Ronnie.
Bubbles concentrated on relighting the candle in its lantern. He looked like someone who had been at the tail end of a hunt on a muddy day. Wet, his clothes streaked heavily with clay, his face haggard with exhaustion, he stared at them, swaying slightly, in the feeble light of the candle lantern.
You're not hunters.
Rafa, Bubbles, don't you remember?
She rushed to him, hovering as though he were a fragile ornament she might break with her gaze.
Yes.
He stood there, his hands trembling, and seemed to be near collapsed. One of his eyes had a dark stain around it. Bubbles saw raw scratches and scrapes on his hands and face.
You need to be dry, and you need food. Come on, Rafa, get him to dry ground.
He stood in ankle-deep water, with a dry ledge not a stride away. But of course, he'd been in the dark the whole time. It was harder than she had imagined to dry a large, very wet and dirty young man in a damp cave. Once out of the water, he dripped water and mud onto the ledge. She had no dry clothes for him and nothing to dry him with. Food, the food she had brought along from the first cache, he held in his hand as if he couldn't remember its purpose. Finally, she and Rafa had to undress him, struggling with the wet fasteners, the uncooperative cloth, and use every scrap of spare clothes to dry him. His skin was cold, as disgusting to touch as meat from a cold locker. He sat huddled, shivering, hardly seeming aware of them. Bubbles heated the food bar over the candle lantern until it sizzled and gave off an oily, heavy smell, then pinched off a bit with her fingers.
Here, eat this.
His mouth gaped. She pushed the food in. His jaw moved a little, and he swallowed.
I'll do that. You keep watch.
Rafa pulled off her shirt and laid it around Ronnie's shoulders. He didn't even glance at her slender nakedness. Bubbles looked away as she stood up.
Keep watch. Fine idea, but how?
They needed the candle lantern. It made them visible. They had to talk. It made them audible. Bubbles moved back to the margin of the main cavern and peeked around. She could just see, with her goggles on, the smudge of light from the entrance across the water. An impossible situation. And yet, in the near silence, in the almost darkness, she felt secure. Cupped in some great hand, a feeling she remembered from those camping trips when she had felt the land under her as a benign presence. Silly, her schoolmates would have said. She had said it herself, of younger girls' illusions. Here she felt like herself again, her real self. Not the mosaic of consensus she was in public, in society. Here she felt connected to the little girl who learned to swim in the waves with the cetaceans, who learned to scramble up steep rocks, dig holes. The little girl who had been called Bubbles, and had thought of herself as a great hero out of some tale. She felt her face shifting to a grin, felt the pressure of the goggles change with that grin. Such a tomboy, her mother had said. Her brothers had said. But tomboys grow up. Not always, she thought. At least, not if it meant changing completely. Ronnie's aunt hadn't.
Bubbles, he's better. Come.
It had been long enough that she was stiff, but she thought at once that Rafa had forgotten to use her new name, the name she now felt was really hers. This was no time to worry about that, but she wouldn't forget. She shook herself and retreated to the lantern light, pushing the goggles down. Rafa nestled close to Ronnie. Bubbles thought to herself that he was undoubtedly warm on that side, and suspected that Rafa had done more than lean against him. Ronnie had expression on his face now. Misery and worry.
They got George. He was alive then, but I don't...
How?
They poisoned the water. I don't suppose you
knew... Yes, we did. That's how we found the cave, going upstream to look for safe water.
Bubbles didn't know if they should press him to talk. Whatever had happened to George must be over now. But he pushed aside Rafa's arm and made himself explain what had happened. She wasn't at all sure he had it straight. How many times had he lost consciousness or fallen asleep? Where had they been, exactly? He had no idea where he had fallen into the cave, except upstream from where he'd left George.
Never mind. You couldn't help it. And it'll be all right.
It wouldn't, of course. If Rafa thought about it, she'd know. Ronnie surely knew, though he might let himself be comforted by Rafa. Certainly she, Bubbles, knew that everything would not be all right. The hunters might keep George alive, trying to catch the rest, but too many had died already. Too much had happened. However this turned out, things would not be all right. Not the way they had been before.
We have to help George. We have to get out of this cave.
He tried to stand up, and Rafa pulled him back down.
Not until the hunters give up.
Bubbles knew they wouldn't. But she didn't want Ronnie yelling and charging around, making it obvious where they were.
They probably took him to Bandon, if they didn't kill him right away.
George would be at Bandon, tied up like someone from an adventure cube, to be rescued later and reunited with his friends. In the cube, she would be the designated girlfriend, the blonde who gave him a passionate kiss as the end music came up. The problem was that she didn't want George to die, but she didn't want to be the designated blonde, either. She was Brunn, not Bubbles, and so far, Brunn wasn't a designated anything. She put that thought aside to think about later, and with a glance at Rafa, set to work to cheer Ronnie up and keep him from doing something rash. Muddy footprints led to a sheer cliff with water seeping out from under a thick mat of ferns. The prince felt safe, and closed by the rocky, fern-covered walls, although he realized it could be a trap, too. Someone overhead who happened to see him could shoot him easily. He peered up into the overlapping layers of green and shivered. He was tired, hungry, and confused.
What could have happened? Where are all the promised girls?
Wet leaves dripped on his head and neck. It made him feel stupid, as well as tired. Long ago, it seemed long anyway, he had been at school with boys who had known each other for years, while he'd been isolated at court. Someone had thought it would be fun to play a joke on the prince. F.R. Crenessel, that had been. He had been lured from his bed on a dark, rainy night by the promise of a rendezvous with girls from the neighboring school. He had trekked across the campus to crouch in a muddy ditch, while, he learned later, the other boys had sewn his clothes together so that he couldn't possibly dress in the morning. And the shadowy figure that had come in the dark, and with giggles had agreed to kiss him, had been Ethar's older brother, Potem. Ethar had had the cube recorder. Painful as the memory was, it made him feel better. Now he understood what was going on. All the other men were older, and they formed a tight clique. This was a joke. They were testing him. The prince was proud of having figured it out. They should have realized he would not panic. He had already killed someone and proved himself. They weren't really risking his death. Perhaps the criminals had never been armed with anything lethal. Not very sporting, perhaps, but prudent. The girl's voice completed his understanding. That had to mean the original promise held. Girls were part of the entertainment here. He looked around carefully. She might be hiding anywhere.
Come on!
He stared, then saw that two big cleated boot prints lay half under the ferns. He felt himself tingling with excitement. A cave! It must be a cave, full of the girls he'd been promised, hidden away in safety until the dangerous part of the hunt was over. Carefully, he stooped and lifted the mat of ferns, peering into the darkness beyond. He could see that he stood on the edge of a large pool. He pulled his night goggles out of his pocket and put them on, squinting until he got his head inside where it was darker. A large domed chamber, with smudged reflections off the surface of water as far as he could see. But clearly someone was inside. He smelled cooking food. The girls were somewhere inside, dry and safe. In all likelihood, there was a way that wasn't very deep. With his goggles on, he should be able to find his way safely around. Ankle-deep water wouldn't bother him, not in his boots. Now that the hunt was over, or mostly over, he saw no reason to crawl under the hanging mat of ferns. He was dirty enough already. He kicked at it until most of it fell, revealing a hole large enough to get through if he stooped. That let more light into the entrance. Even without goggles, he could now see the shape of the first chamber. The light coming from behind him made it hard to see, even with the goggles. He had to feel his way along the edge of the cave, so he chose to move to his left, where his right arm was still free to hold his weapon. Not that he'd need it, he was sure. The girls might be startled, but he had the patch that identified him as a hunter, and afterwards, it would be much more fun to sneak up on them. The smell of cooked food grew stronger. The first flicker of light blazed into his vision, and he pulled the goggles off, blinking. Now he could see nothing. After a few moments, his eyes adjusted, and he saw a faint sparkle ahead, or some light source reflected from moving water. He crept through the darkness, smugly certain of what he would find. The light strengthened. He felt his way around a corner of the rock, and saw them at last.
Ronnie, you unspeakable cad! What are you?
He realized that the two black circles were the bores of hunting rifles like his own. Both girls, blonde and dark, held them steadily.
You're hunters too?
Ronnie's head came around, and he saw the dark stain of a black eye and bruised face.
My sainted aunt! It's the prince!
Gerald?
The blonde girl peered at him, but the rifle did not waver. Her nod, too, came without a move in the weapon's aim.
It is! And you know what? He's not on the list either!
The prince took a deep breath. Whatever was going on here, it had to be irregular.
I demand to know what you're doing here. I am here at the invitation of...
But that, he suddenly realized, he couldn't finish. Ronnie might mention it. It could be embarrassing.
You might introduce me to your, young women?
The dark young woman touched Ronnie with her shoulder, not removing her hand from her rifle.
Introduce me? Heavens, Gerald, you've been dancing with me since boarding school.
The prince couldn't think of anyone like this at any dance he'd been to. She was blonde, yes, but hardly stylish in rumpled pants and shirt, with her hair yanked back behind her ears. She looked older by 5 or 10 years than he was. Someone serious and even dangerous.
Bubbles, Lord Thornbuckle's daughter. Surely you remember now.
None of this made sense. If this was Bubbles, and he supposed it was, though he did not recognize her in these clothes with her hair pulled back, then she could not be one of the girls Lupescu meant. Those girls would be another kind of girl from another kind of family. Not Bubbles, the wild sister of Buttons, and Ronnie, the wild son of a cabinet minister, and... could it be?
Raffaella?
Of course.
The prince swallowed and wished very much to sit down.
I don't understand.
You're wearing an ID tag. What is it?
He had forgotten the bright-colored tag on his collar, which transmitted a signal to other hunters.
This? It identifies me to other hunters.
Other... hunters? You'd better put your rifle down.
That she used neither name nor title made him nervous, and he couldn't think why.
But if you're one of us...
That didn't make sense either. He knew the others. They had all been at the lodge. No women, certainly not these girls, and no Ronnie. He turned to Ronnie.
I thought you'd been shipped off somewhere for punishment.
Put your rifle down.
When he looked at her, the prince felt almost assaulted by the anger that radiated from her.
Now!
He felt his arm moving before he thought about it.
But this is ridiculous. I'm the prince. You're friends. Why should I?
Because I have the drop on you, and so does Bubbles. And you're standing there with the same ID patch as men who tried to kill us.
Kill you? Why?
Drop it! You're an idiot, Gerald. And I bet you've led the rest of them straight here, too.
Harris seethed inwardly. Of course, she had no right of command, but it should have been obvious that knowing where the young people might be was important enough. She led Cecilia outside the room. There had to be some way. Perhaps she could get hold of a flitter.
Excuse me, ma'am.
A young, earnest-faced militiaman had followed them out. Harris nodded at him.
Yes.
You said you might know where the young miss is?
Bubbles. I'm not sure. Why?
I'd take you over there to tell the captain, if you want.
What about your boss?
Well, ma'am, that Bortu, he just got promoted, you know. Never been on anything like this before.
Harris looked at Cecilia.
What about it, m'lady? This, what's your name?
Ducero, ma'am.
This man says he'll fly us over to meet the captain. Want to come along?
Of course.
Thanks. Go find us a flitter. We'll need to stop into the,
Harris nodded at a door down the hall.
All right, but don't be long, in case Bortu figures it out.
It'll be just a moment, I promise.
Harris watched him go, then led Cecilia to the bathroom.
What's that about? I don't need
to... Yes, you do. We need a couple of minutes to make plans, and you never go into combat with a full bladder.
We're not going into combat. We're just going over to tell the militia captain where to look for Ronnie.
Harris caught her employer by a shoulder and turned her around.
Listen, we're going into an unsecured zone where people are shooting at each other. Possibly 3 different sets of people all shooting at each other. And if you can think of a better definition of combat, tell me when we're safely back in our hot tubs. Now, I am taking a very dangerous chance here, because there's no reason to trust Ducerol.
But he wants to help us.
So he said. Didn't it occur to you that Lupescu might want to know about that cave just as badly as the captain? And if he had an agent in this batch of militia, that person would be eager to tell him?
Why would he be stupid enough to stick with what is obviously a losing side? Any smart agent would clam up and wait to see what happens.
Not all agents are smart. And Ducerol may be innocent and completely loyal to Bunny. But... But if he's not, we need a plan. We take our weapons. He will think I'm the dangerous one. I'll let him jump me, and you shoot him if he does.
Me? I've never shot anyone, just game.
New experiences keep you young. You have to. He won't expect it from you. Just have a round in the chamber in case, and don't shoot me by mistake.
You're trusting me with your life.
You trust me with yours in the ship. Besides, what I'm really doing is taking you into danger. You could get killed, too. Remember that when you're tempted to wonder if you really should shoot. Now, cheer up. I'm wearing body armor under my clothes. He doesn't know that, and it'll help. And don't stare at him as if you suspect him. He's thinking of you as a helpless old woman in a flutter about her nephew.
I can see how you commanded a ship.
They walked out side by side, as if they had nothing better to do than sightsee, and the guards, now posted in the corridors, smiled and nodded at them. DeSarl, when they reached the parking area, had one of the flitters rolled out where the supply flitter had been. He looked tense and excited, but that was reasonable. Harris smiled and accepted his hand up into the flitter.
Lady Cecilia should be in back, in case of stray rounds.
DeSarl nodded and looked at Harris.
You want to co-pilot?
There wasn't much co-piloting to be done in a flitter, but Harris nodded.
I'll keep a lookout. Maybe I can spot the captain.
Little chance of that, but he relaxed a bit, as if this evidence of her inexperience in ground operations eased his mind. The hop across to the other island took only minutes. It looked short enough to swim. Harris noted its narrow spine, higher than Bandon's low rounded hills, the beach along the south and east, and two flitters parked at the south end. A squad of militia there worked on something. She could see what looked like bodies. She hoped Cecilia hadn't spotted them.
Is that the captain's flitter? Should we land there?
No. That's the number two. Captain must have gone somewhere else. I'll fly up along the beach.
They flew north slowly. Harris tried to see into the thick canopy with no success. Then DeSarl touched her arm and pointed, and Harris saw a flitter sitting lopsided on the beach. Not the command flitter. It had the serial number they'd been told was on the one Bubbles checked out. Harris saw the gaping hole along one flank, something else she hoped Cecilia missed. The flitter hadn't landed or simply crashed. Someone had shot it down. She felt cold. DeSarl swung the flitter inland, and they rose over the central rocky spine, where tufts and wisps of fog still swirled. Down the other side, and the man waved suddenly.
There. I see something. I'll put us down in that clearing.
That clearing, to Harris, looked entirely too convenient a place for a trap, but she said nothing. She had seen nothing of the captain's flitter, either. But if there were a cave, surely it had to be in the hills somewhere. DeSarl made a steep approach, dropping the flitter so rapidly that Harris caught her breath. They landed hard. She felt the jolt out of the top of her head, and let herself act more stunned than she was. DeSarl, she saw through nearly closed eyes, changed the setting of the flitter's comm unit and pushed the transmission switch all the way over. With his other hand, he shoved the canopy back and waved toward the higher ground.
Come on! I'm sure I saw the captain's signal over there. I'll help you. Do you have any idea where the cave might be?
Harris pushed away his hand, but slowly, as if she almost needed it, and clambered out, intentionally clumsy. She held her rifle loosely. DeSarl waited for Cecilia to clamber out. Harris hoped the jolting landing hadn't jarred Cecilia's reflexes. She also hoped DeSarl was as stupid as he seemed so far. They could get rid of him quickly and still have a chance to block Lupescu, now that the cave was no longer a secret. DeSarl led them into the forest, away from the flitter. Upslope, Harris noted, across a stream bed with a trickle of water in it. Harris wished she dared jump him now, but there was a chance he was leading her to Lupescu. Perhaps he had a real signal to home on, and in that case it would be stupid to strike too soon. He halted soon enough and pointed to a rocky bluff.
There. The captain's probably up there. I'll go back and keep an eye on the flitter.
I can't see where.
It occurred to Harris that DeSarro might have wanted an excuse to bring the flitter for Lupescu's escape. Even now, the Admiral might be flying away to safety, however temporary. She pushed past him, giving him every chance. His sudden grasp on her arm was vindication, even as the feel of his weapon prodding her side made her face the next likely outcome. She wondered if her armor would hold against a point-blank shot, but he slid the muzzle of the weapon up, as if he knew she wore it. Of course, he had seen Lady Cecilia's, and guessed that she had armor too. Her mind insisted on showing her, in vivid detail, what would happen if he fired now, with the muzzle where it was at the back of her neck.
Stop here, ladies. I think Admiral Lupescu might have something to say to Captain Serrano. You're not going to give me any trouble, are you? I know you ladies don't go around with loaded weapons, so don't try to pretend you'll shoot me.
I won't. Don't, Arthur.
Drop the gun.
Harris wondered whether she could reach her boot knife, and decided she couldn't. Cecilia stood there, gawky and gray-haired, clinging to the rifle as if it were a child. She probably hadn't chambered around, Harris thought, so it wasn't really dangerous to be standing here with the boar pointing at her. It shifted a little, and she could feel DeSarro's disgust. She felt it herself.
Listen, lady, you can't shoot me with an unloaded rifle, and I'm not going to be fooled. Either drop it now or I'll shoot you, not just your friend.
Cecilia said nothing and looked as if she couldn't. Harris had never seen a better picture of frozen panic. DeSarro shifted his weight. Harris tried to shift her own to take advantage. But his blow to her head came too fast. She didn't quite lose consciousness, but she stumbled, unable to move fast when he let go of her and swung his weapon toward Cecilia. Then DeSarro was flung away from her. Harris stared. Her employer stared back. Bright color patched her cheeks.
You said to pick the right moment. I think I did.
She held the rifle steady, as if she were perfectly calm.
Damn.
Harris felt her head. It hurt, but she was alive, not a scratch. And DeSarro lay dead, the back of his skull and its contents splattered for a meter or more on the forest floor.
Yes, you did, but I thought for a moment...
I wanted him away from you. At least his weapon. I never did that before. Not a person.
You did it perfectly. You saved my life, is what you did.
Harris picked up her own rifle and walked back to Cecilia. It occurred to her now just how stupid it had been to give DeSarro a chance. If she made the same mistake with Lupescu, well, she wouldn't.
That's what I meant to do. But he's so ugly.
They are.
Harris turned Cecilia away from it, but Cecilia twisted back.
No. I should see what I did.
She walked deliberately up to the body. Already a few tiny flies buzzed near it.
So little time between life and death. We think we have years.
Harris did not tell her how long it often took men to die of wounds. Not now. Now they had other prey. When Cecilia's eyes met Harris's, it gave Harris a chill. They were the cold gray of frozen oysters.
It's amazing how young men like this think we old people are frail, emotional, likely to fall apart at any emergency. Because, of course, we've done everything they imagine they might do, one time or another.
But that's crazy!
The prince had said it before, and Ronnie thought he would go on saying it until he died.
No one would kill you, not like this. Let me call Admiral Lupescu, and we'll get you back to civilization.
After he'd dropped the rifle, the girls had grudgingly lowered theirs and let him sit down. He had refused to believe they were really in danger, and continued to defend the hunters. Had he listened at all? Ronnie thought not.
What about the others? Serrano's crew?
There's some kind of mistake. Those men are criminals, condemned to life at hard labor. They have this option, risking death against a chance for a lesser sentence on a colony world. This is easier for some people than life in prison.
It occurred to Ronnie that he himself would have made that argument not long before. The topic of life sentences versus the death penalty had been a favorite debate in the mess hall. Of course, none of those debating ever expected to face either alternative.
They're not criminals. They're decent people your admiral has a grudge against.
I know it's fashionable for some people to argue against the justice system, but these people have all been tried and convicted and sentenced. Do you think I'd be here if they weren't?
I'm frankly surprised that you're here. Does your father condone hunting people for sport? The last time I heard, he was scolding my father for hunting foxes.
The prince stared at his boots. He looked younger than Ronnie remembered, more the schoolboy he had known.
Well, he doesn't exactly know. I'm supposed to be at the Royal Aerospace Depot in Navan. Admiral Lepescu fixed that for me.
And do you think he'll approve? Even if they are convicted criminals, which they aren't, but just to argue the point?
The prince scuffed his boot along the wall.
Probably not, but he doesn't need to know everything I do. And he certainly approved of my association with people like the other men in the club. Men of stature, men with...
Influence?
The thing is, we've got to get out of here and rescue George.
George? The odious George Starbridge Mahoney is here too? How fitting. Don't worry. No one will hurt George once they realize who his father is.
They know who my father is, and they've tried to shoot me.
Ronnie glanced at Bubbles. She looked like someone it would be dangerous to cross.
Of course, as soon as we do get back to civilization, I've a bone to pick with you, Ronnie. We simply can't ignore it. We must duel.
A duel? You mean formally?
Yes, of course, formally. It wouldn't have been necessary had we not met, but we did. And I had told him, if I saw you again any time in the next 12 months, I would insist on it. It's a matter of honor.
The prince drew himself up, glanced around at the two girls, and posed.
Honor?
Rafa merely looked scornful. Ronnie could not decide whether to laugh or scream.
Look, that whole thing is over. Past, gone. She's all yours, and I'm sorry I said anything. And I'll never bother you again.
You're not going to back out of a duel, are you? That's...
I am not going to pretend to stick holes in you with a holographic sword because of a stupid quarrel over a stupid opera singer who is probably sleeping with both our younger brothers at this moment. Can you get it through your skull that we are being hunted by people with real weapons who want to kill us really dead? We are! Bubbles and Rafa and George and I! And I am not playing your silly games anymore!
Honor is not a game.
No, you're right. It's not a game. But my honor doesn't depend anymore on the kind of things we got into in the regiment. I have other claims on it now.
But what will I tell them when I get home?
If you get home, tell them you grew up. If you did.
Well, if we're to rescue George, we'd better get on our way. If you're convinced that Pescu is dangerous to you, how do you propose to get to Bandon?
Now what? We don't know where the captain is, we don't know where the cave is, and we don't have a flitter anymore. Harris rubbed the knot on her head. She felt stupid, and she didn't like feeling stupid.
Now we think. We can be reasonably sure Ducerol didn't put us down near the captain, but he might have put us down near Lepescu if Lepescu needed a flitter to escape in.
Fine. So now we've provided the villain a machina for his deus to come out of.
Not if we get back to it and use it ourselves. Of course, explaining how all this happened might be tricky later, but we can worry about that when the time comes. Nemesis, as well as helpful gods, arrived by air.
She led the way back down slope. The stream bed, she noted this time, had a lot of boot tracks in it, or alongside. Some went upstream, and some, not as many, she thought, went down. She wasn't enough of a tracker to know when they had been made, though they looked fresh. Cecilia stopped and looked more closely.
Expensive boots. Look, that pair's Y and R.
That meant nothing to Harris, who let her expression speak for her.
Custom, high quality, and even higher prices. These won't be the designated victims, not even Ronnie's. I saw most of his things, and his boots are Fierce Simon's. Also expensive, but not quite as exclusive. Might be George's, but the tracks are too fresh.
You can tell.
I hunt.
Cecilia did not look up. Her fingers hovered above first one print, then another. Not the girl's boots and not Ronnie's. That means a hunter's up there somewhere.
The way Ducerol was leading us. Lupescu, I would bet.
You've noticed that two matching sets go that way and back. Cecilia pointed. Harris hadn't noticed that exactly, but she didn't explain her own ignorance. Expensive, from hunting outfitters, but not as unusual as the Y and R pair. One pair of Y and R's going up and not coming back. And an even fresher set of Dalstims going up. Two hunters, but not together. Not long ago, either. Within an hour.
So we go upstream?
I'd say so. Assuming that the men who went downstream wanted our flitter, they'd have it before we could get back. And upstream... I'm really curious. I thought Y&R put this symbol only on boots they made for the royal family. Does your Admiral Lupescu have a habit of stealing shoes from princes? Or does he pretend to be one?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Harris was past being surprised. Who would have expected someone like Lady Cecilia to know much about tracking?
Let's go find out.
She led the way upstream, weapon ready, all senses alert. Was this another stupid idea, following the tracks so openly? What they should be finding was the cave Ronnie and Bubbles might be in, or the militia captain. But she went on, because after all, the hunters were the danger here. Anticipation shivered in her stomach.
Hunters all. We're all dangerous.
All the hunters but two were safely dead. No threat. He touched the canisters in his pocket lightly, careful not to depress the switches. Only one still menaced him, and that the most difficult to kill without reprisal. But it had to be done, unless the man could somehow be made to kill the others. After that, blackmail would be easy. It would be easiest to kill and not attempt that. But he had always found the most difficult hunts the greatest pleasure. Worth a try, anyway. And if he had to kill even that one, he would have no witnesses. That broadcast from Bandon had startled him. Shaken him, he would even admit to himself. He wondered if the guards he'd left with the boy had turned against him. One of them could be difficult. At least his name had not been mentioned. Perhaps the prisoner didn't know about him. Soon, no one would. The prince led the way back to the cave entrance. They hadn't been able to talk him out of it, although they had tried. The argument had gone on longer than he'd expected. The girls seemed to think their opinion should weigh equally with his own. Bubbles had even threatened to shoot him, but when he pointed out that shooting a member of the royal family could be a serious offense, she had looked at Rafa and shrugged. Of course she would not shoot him now that she knew who he was, any more than he would have shot her. One did not prey on one's own class. And he was the right one to decide what to do. He was the prince, after all. He felt only slightly nervous with the girls behind him carrying their weapons. He had insisted that they not carry loaded weapons in case they stumbled. He didn't want them to get in trouble for shooting him by accident, either. Once they were outside in the light, they could reload, though he hoped to dissuade them. If Ronnie hadn't been so shaken... He felt sure that he, in a similar situation, would not have been a wet, shivering mess. He'd have had Ronnie carry one of the rifles. But as it was, the girls were actually less dangerous than Ronnie. As for any danger, he was sure there wouldn't be any real danger, not once he told Lupescu who they were. He could protect them himself. Light shimmered and bounced from the surface of the pool. Already it had gone down a few centimeters. He squinted against what now seemed like glare, and never saw the figure that waited until it stepped out of the shadows to confront him. He stared at the figure in a protective suit, almost like a spacesuit, with a hunting rifle in the crook of the right arm, and something clasped in the gloved left hand.
Ah.
Lupescu?
You found them. Congratulations. Very good. Now shoot them.
What?
He had misunderstood. He could not have heard the words his memory now replayed to him.
Shoot them, I said.
When the prince hesitated, Lupescu gestured with his rifle.
Either you shoot them, or I will have to kill you, too. Surely you see the necessity.
But they're ours. Can't you see? This is Lord Thornbuckle's daughter. You can't kill her. And Raffaella. And Ronnie Carruthers.
I thought you hated Ronnie. Isn't he the one who dishonored you with your...
I do, of course, but I can't kill them. Not just shoot them.
Silently, he begged someone to shoot Lupescu. But he had insisted on unloaded weapons. The girls could not reload now. If they tried, Lupescu would shoot, and he was in the middle. Sweat rolled down his sides, sudden and cold.
We should never have let him talk us into this. We knew better.
Too late, smart. Too soon, dead.
Lupescu's hand turned, showing a slick gray canister.
It would be a more merciful death, if you care about that.
The prince realized that fear had layers he had never imagined. That had to be a gas canister. Riot gas? Nerve gas? He struggled to stay calm. He had to convince Lupescu. He had to find the right thing to say.
But they're my friends. You can't expect me to do it. There has to be another way. We could agree to keep your secret.
Even through the gleaming curve of his face mask, Lupescu's eyes looked distinctly from face to face.
I doubt it. Lord Thornbuckle's daughter is not likely to keep such secrets from her father.
You're right about that. Not that killing us will do any good in the long run. He'll find out, and then he'll find you.
Lupescu lifted the canister in a mock salute.
To your courage, my dear. You may stop that shuffling you're doing. You cannot screen your friend as she reloads. I can shoot the prince and you before you shoot me. And I'm wearing protection. As for your friend, Ronnie, a young man who cannot keep from boasting about his amatorial conquests is hardly likely to hold his tongue about this the next time he gets drunk. The Dark Girl, well, it's a pity, but many have died already, and so it goes. You choose, Your Highness. Kill them, and I know you will not talk. It would not be in your own best interest. I have a flitter. We can escape somehow. I always do. But if you cannot kill them, then I'm afraid you too must die. Go ahead. It won't be any easier for waiting.
Harris followed the boot prints up the narrowing cleft. Suddenly, one pair stopped. Whoever it was had shifted around, trampling his own prints, and then completely new prints, larger, with a different tread, set off again. She frowned at them, trying to remember where she'd seen that tread pattern, then shrugged. It really didn't matter.
He put on overshoes. Why?
Harris waved a hand to hush her. They had to be close. She could tell the slope was closing in ahead of them. If she hadn't been following the tracks, she might have missed the angle to the cave entrance. But the tracks led directly to it. A mat of wilting ferns and moss, a gaping hole into darkness, and a voice. No, more than one voice. She was sure one of the voices was Lupescu's. She pulled Cecilia close.
He's there, ahead of us. And I think it's the youngsters. Stay back. Be ready to shoot if I go down. And watch for anyone behind us.
Cecilia nodded, eyes hard again. Harris crept nearer to the cave entrance, fighting down a surge of excitement that threatened to send her charging straight at Lupescu, no matter what. She gave Cecilia a last look and ducked inside. Her eyes adjusted quickly. More light came in the entrance than she'd have thought from outside. She flattened herself against the damp stone to her left and edged around it. There. A big, bulky shape in a protective suit, its back to her, and four faces beyond, pale against the black behind them. The suit had to be Lupescu. Could she get him without hitting them? Was he wearing armor under the suit? And why the suit in this weather? What contamination did he fear? Then, she saw the clenched left hand and caught her breath. If that was a gas grenade... She edged nearer, hoping none of the youngsters would notice her. Although she knew she must be a very visible dark blot against the bright entrance.
Go ahead. Won't be any easier for waiting.
Harris stared, just able to make out Ronnie, Bubbles, and Rafa. But who was that fourth young man with the extravagant mustache and a gleam of earring? A friend of Lepescu's? She bit her lip. She could not possibly get both of them before someone else got shot. She reset her weapon for the alternate clip of ammunition. If Lepescu was wearing personal armor, this should penetrate it. More danger to bystanders, but not as much danger as a live Lepescu. But as her eyes adjusted to the dim light, she saw the mysterious young man shift his weight, his expression changing from bewilderment and disbelief to mulish stubbornness, and he dropped his weapon.
I won't do it, and I think you'll find it impossible to explain my disappearance.
Harris aligned her sights and shifted a little to clear Ronnie. It was at best a tricky shot. The ricochets would be wicked.
Not really. An inconvenience, yeah, but not nearly an impossibility. It's a pity, and I'm sorry. This is not a sporting proposition.
The canister dropped from his left hand, bounced, and rolled along the stone toward the water. Harris flinched. She was too far away to do anything more. If its seal broke, they were all dead. Ronnie and the prince leaped together and landed on it like two eager players trying to recover a fumbled ball.
Run!
Harris knew it would have been useless. The girls didn't run. After their first startled jerk, both of them seemed to be calmly reloading their weapons. Harris stared at them. They must have known they were in danger. Why hadn't they had a round in the chamber? Then the canister had not fired. It lay under the young men, inert and deadly, only in anticipation. They were alive. They were going to stay alive. Harris rose from her careful crouch and walked light-footed across the cave to Lepescu's body. Not body yet, for he was alive, though mortally wounded. She looked down at him warily. He might have other weapons.
You.
She could not think what to say. All the clever retorts she remembered from history crumbled and blew away in the wind of her anger. And it came to her that she did not need to say much under the circumstances.
Yes. Commander Serrano, with all due respect.
Even dying, even in pain, he had a courage she could not deny. Scorn dragged his face into a mask of contempt.
Wait. You haven't won yet.
Harris wanted to throttle him, finish it with her fingers on his throat, but she could not do that. Instead, she removed, with such control that she felt herself almost a machine, his other weapons. Cecilia could not have stayed out of the cave after the gunshot if someone had chained her to the rock. She scrambled into the darkness, stumbled into the pool and back out, and came up against the stone buttress that had blocked Harris's vision. Now, shocked and fascinated by her captain's behavior, she had let her attention wander from the cave entrance. When she thought to look around, there was another stranger, this one dirty and ragged, as well as armed. Another stood behind him. He glared at her, his weapon aimed where it could menace all of them.
What are you doing here?
The man looked dangerous, and probably was. He must be one of those the hunters had chased.
I'm Lady Cecilia.
Then she realized he wasn't even looking at her. He was looking past her, at Harris.
Petrus.
Captain Serrano. Harris.
You're with Admiral Lepescu?
Cecilia stared at her captain.
You know this man? Who is he?
Harris shook her head. For that instant, she could not speak.
Petrus with Lepescu? Was he always Lepescu's agent? Was this what Lepescu's dying words meant?
Cecilia started to reach for her ID packet, but the shift of his weapon stopped her hand.
I'm Lady Cecilia de Marctos, as I said. We came looking for my nephew Ronnie and his friends, with the militia.
Petrus still looked past her to Harris.
Ah, the rescue arrives.
He glanced briefly at Cecilia.
Tell me what you know about Admiral Lepescu.
Cecilia thought of objecting, but the weapon suggested caution, even cooperation. She had not realized before just how large the boar could look, seen from this angle.
I don't know him.
She didn't tell you?
Whatever she told me is no concern of yours, young man.
You're not the best judge of that. And you think I'm working with the Admiral?
Cecilia glanced at Harris and recognized her expression for what it was. sorrow and despair, a great wound. Even when telling the story of her resignation, she had never looked this shattered.
I know he organized the hunt here. And why else would military personnel be here with him?
With him? You, of all people, can believe I might work with that? That... And does it look like I'm with him? Is this a uniform? No, I am not with Lupescu.
He turned away, still pale around the mouth. Cecilia stopped him.
Excuse me, young man. But although you and my captain may be perfectly clear about what is going on, I am not. Paris has told me the Admiral is an old enemy she would rather not meet save over a weapon. When my nephew and his friends disappeared, and we found that Lupescu was expected, she became convinced he had something to do with it.
Your captain? Your employer?
That's right. Captain Serrano signed a contract with me only 2 days after resigning her commission.
He matched her gaze, as if he could pull answers out through her eyes.
And then?
And then she took command of my yacht, and we came here. Now.
Directly?
No. Although I don't quite see what business it is of yours. My former captain had been negligent, if not actually criminal, in maintaining systems. And we had to detour for emergency repair of the environmental system.
The man turned to Harris, the corner of his mouth twitching.
You didn't check things yourself before you started?
The inspection sheets had been faked. Lady Cecilia's schedule had already been set back. She wanted a quick departure and
you couldn't wait to escape. You took your bribe and ran off.
Bribe? Is that what he told you?
He told us nothing except the list of charges.
Charges? But I resigned so they wouldn't prosecute any of you.
Petrus lowered his weapon suddenly and nodded at Ronnie.
Wait. Then it's true what this youngster heard? Are you telling me you resigned to save us without any reward?
Yes. That was the choice. Resignation and no trouble for you, or courts for all. It wasn't fair to put all of you through that. It had been my decision. What do you mean about charges?
That bastard.
Cecilia remembered hearing once that on some planets that was still an insult, although most people were now decanted and not berthed.
He got you out of the way, brought us to trial, and then had us here to play his little games with.
You? It was you he was hunting?
Petrus nodded. Harris shook her head, like someone who has just taken a hard blow, and turned to Lupescu's body with such violence that Cecilia was afraid she would attack it barehanded.
Damn you! I killed you too soon! If only I could...
Cecilia gaped. She had never imagined Harris losing control. Petrus strode past Cecilia and grabbed Harris by the shoulders, dragging her away.
But he's dead. You can't change it now.
I'd have... You've done something. Oh, it's not fair.
Harris turned a tear-streaked face back to Cecilia.
He took my ship, my career, and then to kill them this way. I'm sorry, Petrus. I didn't imagine this. I couldn't. I believed they'd hold to the agreement.
No, you couldn't. I'm sorry I misunderstood what you'd done.
How many died?
Too many. But it's over now.
It's not over. It will never be over.
But she stood straight, motionless, and Cecilia watched her usual control return, layer by layer.
Well, it's mostly over.
Petrus and the other men whirled, startled, but relaxed when they saw the distinctive uniform of Bunny's militia. The militia captain was grinning at them.
Unless one of you is the wicked Admiral Lupescu.
Admiral Lupescu is dead.
Captain Sigand came nearer, glanced at Lepescu's body, and nodded.
You shot him?
Yes. He was threatening them.
Harris nodded at the young people. Ronnie and the Prince had untangled themselves from each other, the floor, and the quiescent grenade, and now stood more or less at attention. Rafa had gone to Ronnie, Cecilia noticed, as if he were her responsibility. Bubbles stood a little apart from the group, rifle in hand, watching Harris intently. Cecilia had time to wonder why, when both girls were armed, neither had shot the Admiral. Captain Sigand looked them over.
And here's Lord Thornbuckle's daughter, and I presume that's your nephew, ma'am, and the other young lady, and who's this?
The militia captain looked at the prince, and the prince looked confused.
Mr. Smith, a friend of the family.
Captain Sigynd allowed a dubious expression on his face, and then shrugged it away.
Mr. Smith, indeed. An invited guest? Pardon, but I'm required to ask.
Yes, Mr. Smith has often been an invited guest here. My father will confirm it.
I see.
The captain looked as if he would like to pursue that, but again chose discretion. Well-trained, Cecilia thought. A quick glance at Harris's face, and she caught another well-trained expression. Harris, however, would certainly pursue the matter later.
Well, if everyone will come along, we can get you back to Bandon this evening and fly you back to the main house by morning. Or you could spend the night on Bandon and fly back tomorrow, whichever you prefer.
Cecilia realized she was very, very tired indeed and wanted to sit down.
What about George?
Cecilia awoke only moments later, thoroughly ashamed of herself, to find Ronnie kneeling beside her. He looked, she thought, far worse than she possibly could, with that colorful pattern of bruises on his head and face, his muddy, still wet clothes, and the pallor of exhaustion and hunger. She glanced around for Harris. Her captain was talking to the militia captain, who nodded as he keyed information into a wrist comp. Other militia had appeared. Lupescu's body had already been put into a black bag and lifted onto a stretcher. She saw it being carried out.
Are you all right, Aunt Cecilia?
I'm fine.
She pushed herself up on her elbows. She was too old to faint. At her age, people took it seriously and talked about medical causes.
Just hungry.
She was ravenous, and remembered that she had not had breakfast or lunch. Ronnie looked around frantically, as if he thought she expected him to pull a good meal from the rock.
Don't worry. I forgot to eat, that's all.
When she glanced around again, she saw that the two young women were sitting together doing something to each other's faces, and the other young man stood awkwardly alone.
What's the...
Mr. Smith. He's Mr. Smith. I don't know if you've met.
Oh, we've met.
She eyed him, then glanced at the prince.
Mr. Smith, is it? Did you two arrange to meet here and continue your disagreement?
No, he was here on other business. Finished business now.
Cecilia looked at the prince, who seemed to feel her gaze, and returned it. In the cave's uncertain light, she could not be sure of his expression, but he approached them.
Excuse me, Bonnie. I really do need to talk to you about the duel.
Mr. Smith, you do not need to talk to anyone. Under the circumstances, Mr. Smith, the less you talk to anyone, the better. I very much doubt your father knows where you are.
Well, no, he doesn't, but still...
You would be wise, Mr. Smith, to wait until your father explains your situation more fully. There is no question of a duel. Is that quite clear?
Cecilia put her eye upon him, the eye that had quelled many a brash young man, even when she herself was young. He subsided. Even the stubborn knot along his jaw went away, and the jaunty curl at the tips of his mustache seemed to droop.
What I was going to say, ma'am, was that your nephew's courage in landing on the gas grenade cancelled out any previous disagreement we might have had.
You did too.
Wise of both of you. Now, if someone can find me something to eat,